Welcome to Disney Versus, the podcast that is creative, hardworking, and shredded. This is the podcast where we have animated discussions about animated movies. I'm Tori.
I'm Grace.
Today we got a twofer for you. We are going to catch up, and we are also going to give our thoughts about the Lilo and Stitch live-action remake, and we're going to talk about Pixar's newest release, Elio. Before we do that, and before what you watch it, Grace, how are you? It's been many moons.
Man, I've had the most happen in the many moons. I sold my house in Indianapolis and moved to Michigan into a short-term rental with Matt. And then we bought a house. I started a new job at the end of April. And now we're in new house. But I think before this weekend, I think we'd spent maybe 7 nights together because it's drum corps season. I was traveling for work. I was in Texas a little bit for Beyonce, and we just got back. So our house is not really unpacked yet.
Were you there for a car night?
I wasn't. I was there for night two, which...
When she wasn't on the car.
When she wasn't on the car, and we got shortchanged because, yes, okay, great. So don't bring out the car again. That makes sense. That's smart. Let's not do that. But there's no reason to cut all of Cowboy, or all of 16 Carriages. We didn't get any of 16 Carriages, and it made the show feel, because it's the second to last song, like it goes 16 Carriages into Amen, so it just felt like a really abrupt ending. So she does Amen, and then Stage Goes Black, and then like they real quick put up all the house lights. It's like, oh, okay, we're done. Okay.
Oh, boo. So
yeah, it was, I hate that. It sucked.
At the Houston show of all things.
I know, and there was...
She ain't no real diva.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but there was a really cool Houston-specific shirt, and it all sold out. I'm pretty sure it sold out the first night. I saw one person with it when we were there on night two. I might legit get a dupe of it because I thought it was so cool.
I have not been having as exciting of a life as you. Oh. I'm still doing the thing. I've been reading a lot of books, which we'll talk about in a second. I got my AC fixed.
Woo! That was a big chunk of change.
Oh. Especially when it's July in Texas. Like, not having AC is not smart.
Yeah.
But I got mine fixed 2-3 weeks ago. My car, she's frosty now. So excited.
Did your car have a name?
It did. I don't remember what it was. It was an M word. Okay. It was an M name.
Mine is Geraldine. We call her Jerry.
She old lady.
No, she's based off of this baddest book character from Zodiac Academy.
Oh, and you have a Tesla. Mm-hmm. When I was leaving work today, there were two white Teslas parked right next to each other. Mm-hmm. Same model. I sent a picture of them to my sister, and I was like, only in the city that I work in. Mm-hmm. And as I was pulling out, I missed there was a third Tesla, same color, same model, like two spots over. And I was like... Oh no, it's the simulation.
That's funny. I drive a red Tesla with black wheels, and in Indianapolis, like, that wasn't a color combo that you ever saw. Like, there was one in the Indianapolis metro that I would see every once in a while, and like, I'm pretty sure it was the same one.
Would y'all like Drag Race?
No.
There must only be one.
No, but I chose it because like, I like it, but also I wanted it to be kind of unique. And then I went to Seattle last year, and like, there are so many red Teslas with black mm-hmm. wheels, and I'd be like, who's that bitch? Who is that? Jerry, have you been busy?
She's been around. She's been getting around.
Yeah.
So what you watching?
I really haven't been watching that much. I've had Wicked on as kind of like my comfort movie when I'm unpacking or I'm trying to go to like get ready for bed. This last week, I watched Maverick on my way home from Texas.
Have you seen F1 though?
I haven't yet. Man, I feel like it was such a late start to summer movies because a few weeks ago, like I was looking at the list of movies and I was like, there's nothing I want to see. And then I was looking this weekend. It was like literally everything that's in theaters right now I want to see or have already seen. And then Matt and I watched one of the Mission Impossibles. I want to see the new one I didn't really grow up with the Mission Impossible movies and have seen a couple, but the ones that I've seen in the last couple of years I've liked. And so we picked one and got like halfway through it. I was like, is this the other one that we've watched? And I think it was the one before the other one that we've watched. But yeah, which I think I've seen three total.
I had every intention of watching all of them before The Final Reckoning. Mm-hmm. Because they were all, I think all six of them were on Prime. Mm-hmm. At the same time. I was like, okay, I'll just watch, you know, one a night, one every other night, and then go see Final Reckoning. Mm-hmm. I watched the first one. The first one's great, don't get mm-hmm. me wrong. But after that, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And I still haven't seen The Final Reckoning.
That's funny.
I'll get to it.
What else have you been watching?
I've been reading. I just finished Atmosphere, the newest book from Taylor Jenkins Reid, who wrote Daisy Jones and the Six.
Oh, I like that a lot.
And I like Atmosphere because it's about women in the astronaut program in mm-hmm. the 80s. So it's all set in Houston.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And it's like, wow, they really go to Frenchie's a lot.
I mean, Frenchie's like, is good. It's classic.
I agree. But I was just like, there are other places to go besides Frenchie's.
Is it still there? Well, it's proximity. It's just right there.
That's probably it. Yeah, that makes it's sense. Because it's like their dorm, next to their dorm, air quotes.
Yeah, it's literally like maybe half a mile from the Space Center.
Jenkins Reid, she was in Houston like doing research. Mm-hmm. And where she was researching, it's like, oh, Frenchie's is right there. That is where they're going to go.
And they also have like astronauts all on the wall with signatures and everything. At least they used to.
Oh, at Frenchie's.
I don't even know at Frenchie's. But yeah, it used to be a thing that like all of the inside had framed photos of astronauts that were signed.
I also watched, finally, shout out to Kim, who told me to watch the show when it first came out in like 2022, Blue Eye Samurai on Netflix. So good. It's 8 episodes, waiting for season two. It's a samurai story, obviously, about revenge and like otherness. Mm-hmm. And it's like what it takes to be a hero, basically. Those are kind of the themes. And it's so good. The animation, it's so great. There's one episode where the character is storming a castle and there's like levels to it. Mm-hmm. And each level is a different like directing style. Like the camera's doing different things on each level.
That's cool.
And it was like a video game movie. It's wild. Hard recommend for me. Let's get to a little bit of news. Let's start with the sad stuff. We have a couple of Disney deaths that happened since our last episode. Half of these are Disney related, the other are Disney adjacent. Renee Victor, a Texas native of San Antonio, passed away at the age of 86. She was the voice of Abuelita in Coco. She was Mama Coco's daughter, the one who was always threatening anyone playing music. Mm-hmm. So she passed away. Mark Snow passed away at 78. The biggest thing that he'll be known for is he was the composer of the X-Files theme.
Oh, okay.
I randomly have the X-Files theme on the store playlist at work. So every time it randomly comes on, someone will be like, is that the X-Files? It's like, yeah. I'll just get really excited about it because it's like no one expects it and it always comes up out of nowhere. Another composer, Alf Clausen, passed away at the age of 84. He was the longtime composer for The Simpsons. He was with the show for 27 years and is credited on nearly 600 episodes.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
How many episodes are there of The Simpsons total now?
790.
That's impressive.
He did not do the main theme. That was Danny Elfman. But Alf Clausen was the, he did the music for the episodes themselves. And he was with the show from the beginning up until, I want to say, 2019. Apt for the movies we're talking about today, David H.K. Bell passed away at the age of 46. He played the shaved ice guy in the live-action remake of Lilo and Stitch that we're talking about today.
Oh.
It was really sad because he passed away like maybe 2 or so weeks after the movie came out.
Oh.
It was really unfortunate. RIP to those individuals. In other news, notable voice actor Keith David is receiving a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And I got to meet him last month.
Woo!
If you follow me on Facebook or Instagram, I posted a picture with him that I look kind of chubby in, but that's neither here nor there. But he was very cool to meet. He was the first voice actor when I was growing up that like I recognized his voice from things.
Mm-hmm.
He got a kick out of that. Nice. And it was really nice. And he completed my Disney autograph wall
mm-hmm.
with him in the center as Dr. Facilier.
So, nice.
Love that. Disney's next live-action adaptation, Hercules, is getting overhauled because of the success of Lilo and Stitch.
Interesting.
It's getting overhauled because the original plan was to diverge from the original movie, the 97 movie. But with the success of Lilo and Stitch, which sticks fairly close to the original movie,
mm-hmm.
they've decided to change course and try to go back closer to what the course of the original movie. My question to you, would you watch a Hercules live action movie? And which one would you watch? Would you watch one that stays close to the original, or would you watch something that has elements of the original but is on the whole very different?
I think it depends. I like Hercules a lot more than you do. And so it's one of those things where if it's done well, then making it a little bit different is okay. But also, don't fuck with what's not broken.
Right.
After seeing Lilo and Stitch, I think it can be really good considering how they kind of blended the animation or the aliens in Lilo and Stitch with people, because that's kind of what I imagine it'll be like for Hercules.
On Twitter and Instagram, I've been seeing clips from the Hercules musical that's playing in the West End right now.
Uh-huh.
Number one, when are we getting a cast album? How dare you? Two, when is that coming to the U.S.? Because, again, how dare you?
Speaking of What You Watchin' and Poison and Divas.
Who said Poison?
Because there's Poison in Hercules.
Okay. Staying on topic.
While I was in New Jersey, New York, I went to see Death Becomes Her and got about 20 minutes in before I realized that the sorceress character was Michelle fucking Williams from Destiny's Child. Yes. I think I knew at one point, but had forgotten, and I decided that I was going to go see a show by myself and kind of like read some reviews on stuff and opted on that one, but like completely blanked that she was in it. And she was great. She was awesome. I liked the show overall. I didn't think the whole thing was amazing, but she was amazing in it. And I couldn't help but thinking like, oh, but she doesn't have to dance because she's the worst dancer Destiny's Child has ever had. But yeah, she's got pipes though.
Nice. Was it a jukebox musical or was it all original?
No, it was all original.
Now that I have Spotify Premium, mm-hmm. I've listened to a whole lot more music,
mm-hmm.
which helps with the Music League.
Yeah.
And I've listened to The Color Purple, which led mm-hmm. to me using it in the Music League. And I listened to Sweeney Todd with Josh Groban as Sweeney. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
You didn't watch Stranger Things, did you?
I watched the first season, but I don't really remember it.
So Dustin from the first season, mm-hmm. well, he's in the whole thing. So Dustin plays Toby.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, Dustin can sing. Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good, though.
I do want to see Sweeney Todd live. If you haven't yet, have you listened to the Angela Lansbury version?
I haven't, no.
Listen to it and then look it up. But the staging was really unique because they didn't have an orchestra. They didn't have a pit. And so everyone on stage was the pit. And as they died, as people in the show died, they put on white outfits or white gowns or something and then played their parts on stage and were still singing as chorus. Huh.
I'm gonna watch that later.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I've just read the notes on it.
Last thing before we get to Lilo and Stitch. Lilo and Stitch 2 is in development. The adaptation itself has made almost $1 billion.
Holy crap.
When I wrote the notes, it was at $972.7 million worldwide. So, yeah, that's how you get a single greenlit.
I'm surprised.
Speaking of, let's go ahead and drop a spoiler alert for the entire rest of the episode, because we're going to talk about Lilo and Stitch, our thoughts briefly on Lilo and Stitch, and then we're going to dive deep on Elio. I mean, it's not much of a spoiler alert, because like I mentioned, kind of, Lilo and Stitch is kind of the same-ish movie, beat for beat, as mm-hmm. the first one, give or take a couple of important things. What did you think?
I don't like this story. I remember that from the animated version, that I just don't love this story. And so I've only seen Lilo and Stitch, I think, twice, maybe three times. But yeah, I don't love the story. I have a hard time in general watching or reading characters that are bad or are poorly behaved or just awful people. And so I got halfway through this movie and was like, I don't have patience for Lilo and Stitch's behavior. I don't have it. You're grown enough to recognize that your sister's losing it and gonna lose you. So I just didn't have patience for it. That being said, I cried multiple times in this movie and I was fucking pissed about it. I was pissed about it because it still pulls at your heartstrings, especially when you get to Lilo in the water both times, when she when she falls into the water and her sister saves her, and then when Lilo and Stitch go into the water and her sister saves her and sends her with the guy whose name I can't remember, and then goes back for Stitch, and the look on Stitch's face, that whole thing, and just the self-sacrifice and acceptance of his fate was a lot. It was a lot. So yeah, I'm annoyed that this still got me crying pretty good. And my mom had messaged me, she saw this a week ago when I saw Elio, and then I saw it today, and my mom messaged me when she finished Lilo and Stitch and said that she big ugly cried, and I was like, god damn it. I thought the integration of animation versus live action was really good. We've come a long way from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh yeah.
What about you?
I liked it. I also liked that Stitch was well integrated into the real world. When we first saw the trailer, I was like, oh, this looks like it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And it helped because they stuck pretty closely to the story, give or take a couple of things, like Gantu is missing, and we'll talk about the ending in a second. The biggest takeaway is that a lot of these movies, because animation lends itself to a sense of vibrance, especially somewhere like Hawaii, going from a vibrant palette in animation to the real world, it kind of flattens itself out.
Yeah.
And I think especially the beginning, once you get to Hawaii, because the prologue is all in space. Once you get to Hawaii, there's the vibrance of the fish and, just the town as Lilo's running through, that just doesn't hit the same mm-hmm. when you go live action.
Yeah, and it's still beautiful, but when you compare it to, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, when you compare it to the animation, it's just nowhere near as saturated.
It just looks so washed out, because the real world isn't always as colorful. Mm-hmm. It's the way it is. I really liked the fight at the beginning when Lilo just body checks Myrtle. Muriel? The girl with the red hair mm-hmm. off of the stage for bullying her, like in front of everybody. Jeez. Mm-hmm. And just body checks her off the stage. That was wonderful. And I feel like that's the one of the things that everyone was still wanting was like, it wasn't the all out like brawl that happened in the animated version, but I'll take the body check because that was shocking.
Yeah, there were some things that like at the end when they totally wreck the house and he's shooting at a child, that hit different and was way more disturbing. And that I think that was also one of the moments that I was crying.
Making Jumba the villain versus Gantu, who's a basically a government authority figure mm-hmm. or a law enforcement figure, galactic law enforcement. I think it works a little bit better because Jumba's, you know, the literal mad scientist mm-hmm. and him knowing that Stitch needs to be, I think he, correct me if I'm wrong, he's not trying to destroy Stitch, he's trying to capture him so he can reprogram him.
Yeah.
I think that lends to Jumba, that motivation lends to Jumba's character better, I think, than if he was just trying to capture him.
I agree with that.
I like that. I wish they would have had Gantu, and I'm sure in the sequel they're probably going to have Gantu, but I think what they did with Jumba, I can accept it. Mm-hmm. It's not one of the, I'll say it's up there with some of the better adaptations. I know we just had our adaptation bracket. I think it would be, you know, pretty high up there. Better than Snow White, which you refused to watch.
I absolutely refuse. When you told me how bad it was and then I looked at the scores, I was like, absolutely not. Like, I might, but it might require, I don't know, not being entirely sober.
Speaking of, did I tell you about my experience watching Frozen the musical when it came on Disney Plus?
No.
I took my last gummy and watched that. It was amazing.
That's how they get you to like Frozen. That's amazing.
Yep. I have to be under the influence to enjoy Frozen. And I mean, Samantha Barks was crushing it. But we're talking about Lilo and Stitch. We'll talk about Frozen on the musical later. So let's talk about the ending. The biggest change to the ending was, and they kind of telegraphed it all movie. I believe Nani wants to be a marine biologist, if I remember mm-hmm. right.
Yeah.
And they had been pushing her. I mean, she couldn't do that. She couldn't go to school and pursue that because she had to stay and take care of Lilo. And ultimately, at the end of the movie, she elects, instead of keeping Lilo, she elects to let Lilo live with their neighbor, who is a huge family friend, and they allow Nani to go to school to pursue her dream. How did you feel about the big change?
I didn't remember that it was a change, honestly, because I didn't watch the animated version. At the end, like, does she go back? What happens with the portal? So Nani uses a portal to get from school to Lilo, which is a great surprise. And then they're trying to close the portal before Bubbles gets to the bedroom. And then it looks like they maybe broke the gun. So I don't know. I don't know how, if she's going back to school, but I did, in the animated version, did Lilo keep saying the Marines instead of Marine Biologist?
It wasn't even part of it in the
I think it's a tie to Elio, because there are so many similarities between these movies. And so I think that's what it is. I think it's a tie to Elio.
I don't know if it's a tie to Elio, but I definitely agree that there are so many similarities between these two movies.
Yeah.
I'm not up in arms about, you know, the change, because Ohana means family and everything, but family also means letting your siblings and your family be their best selves. Mm-hmm. And they set up that, you know, the neighbor is part of their Ohana. David is the character, the dude that you were thinking of. David is their neighbor in this, which, okay, that's fine. You know, David has a crush on Nani. They live next door to each other. It makes sense. They also set up that, you know, David and the neighbor are a big part of their family because since mom and dad died, they've been taking care of Nani and Lilo too.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
It's a big departure, but it's not illogical.
No. And I think it's a healthy way to show how a family can handle that. Every family is going to handle death differently. And sometimes we're not equipped to take care of the people that we love and need to ask for help. And that's absolutely tragic. But having people around that are still part of their extended family, I think that's a great way to manage both. To say that, like, yes, we're taking care of Lilo and Stitch, but still letting Nani do what she needs to go do.
Especially if it could lead to something bigger and better for Lilo in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's not going to be gone for forever. I'm sure she's going to be in the sequel. I'm confused as to why they were hiding the portal. Maybe there was a rule like you don't use the portal gun in front of civilians or whatever, which I guess, I don't know if Nani had a roommate or anything. Like, no, who was going to see the portal?
Well, I'm not sure Cobra Bubbles know about the portal gun. Like, did he ever see the portal gun?
I don't remember.
So it's, if that's like that technology that was still pretty kept secret, then like, yeah, I wouldn't want to share that.
Oh yeah, that's a no-no. I don't think we need to grade it. It was fine. I'd be interested to see what a sequel would look like, because they had Lilo and Stitch had a TV show and multiple spin-off movies, so there are so many directions that they could go, and they could also use a little bit of everything and still tell a semi-original story. So we'll see. And like we said, there are characters that weren't included that could pop up. So they have I think Lilo and Stitch is probably one of the more rich worlds that Disney has. So we'll see. Especially because space is involved.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of space, I think this is a good place to take a trailer break. So on the other end of it, we can talk about Elio. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we'll be right back.
Okay, come and get me.
You okay?
I'm trying to get abducted by aliens.
Elio!
Skipping school!
I don't know if this is boundary testing or sleep regression or... Which one of these is you?
I don't know, but I think that one is you.
My son, are you prepared to become the greatest war machine in the universe?
No.
Your life isn't up there, Elio. You need to make friends.
I just want to belong somewhere.
So if any aliens are listening, please come and get me. Okay, bye. I love you. It's really happening.
We search the universe
for the dreamers and stargazers
like you.
This is awesome!
Are you gonna eat me?
What? Ew.
Oh, no. My name's Elio. Well, what's your name?
No one's ever asked me my name before. I'm Glordon.
Back home, I didn't fit in.
I thought Earth was the problem. But what if it's me?
Well, I like you, and you seem fine to me.
I never had a friend before.
Me neither.
Up top.
I am Grygon. Prepare to be conquered.
But I just got here.
Perhaps one of us could talk to Lord Grygon.
I am Shy.
I'll do it.
What a heroic figure.
I'm finally fitting in, and now Grygon's gonna blow everyone up. My friends need our help.
You made a friend?
Just give me.
Feel my wrath. Oh. Glordon?
Hi, Dad. I'm a bargaining chip.
No, say the other thing.
Oh, help me, Father.
Quiet, you.
What does that unholy sound? Stop!
Don't wanna stop at all.
These are the lava tunnels.
Glordon, I am not fireproof!
Why didn't you say something?
Glordon.
Just get in my mouth.
It's actually kind of comfy in here.
It is? I've never been in there.
All right. That was the more recent trailer that had the most to do with the movie that we actually saw. There are two trailers. There was an original trailer that came out like 2 years ago. We'll reference it, but anyway. Grace, can you give them a summary of Elio?
Elio, a space fanatic with an active imagination, finds himself on a cosmic misadventure where he must form new bonds with alien life forms, navigate a crisis of intergalactic proportions, and somehow discover who he's truly meant to be.
That's all happens in the movie.
That's good.
The movie was directed by Madeline Sharafian, who is making her feature directorial debut. She directed the Pixar short Burrow, also directed by Domi Shi, who directed the short Bao and the feature Turning Red. And it was co-directed by Adrian Molina, who directed Coco. Molina was originally slated as the lone director when this project first started, but he left the project, but did so much work on it, he retains a co-director credit. The movie was written by Julia Cho, who was the writer on Turning Red, Mark Hammer, who was a writer on Shotgun Wedding, and Mike Jones, who was a writer on Soul and on Luca. The movie stars Jonas Kibrib, Zoe Saldana, Remy Edgerly, and Brad Garrett. The music was done by Rob Simonson, who was a composer on two movies that I love and absolutely recommend, The Way Way Back and Gifted, starring Chris Evans. He also did the music for Ghostbusters Afterlife and Deadpool and Wolverine. The movie currently has an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 7 out of 10 on IMDb, a 66 on Metacritic, and here's the big kick, it has an A cinema score, which is probably the most important thing out of all four of those ratings. For box office, it made $20.8 million domestically in its first opening weekend. Its current worldwide gross is $98.7 million as of this recording. It had the lowest opening weekend for a Pixar film, and it's on track to become Pixar's lowest grossing film.
Oh, wow.
Which is unfortunate. So, first impressions. What'd you think, Grace?
I liked this a lot. I wasn't really sure what... I mean, we've been wanting it for a while. We've been watching this for a while.
It's supposed to come out in 2024.
Yeah. I'd forgotten really like what it was supposed to be about, but I really enjoyed it. There were several one-liners that made me laugh. There were a couple parts that made me cry. So yeah, I liked it. What about you?
I liked it too. I also didn't know what to expect. There's podcast footage of me not knowing what to make of this movie, but being cautiously optimistic. I also had a lot of one-liners that it's so funny, like the line I brought us in with, the creative, hardworking, and shredded. they use shredded so often. I was like, I feel like this is an ad lib that just stayed in. There were also a couple of moments where I got teary eyed. I don't know. It could have been, you know, dust in the theater, but who knows? Mm-hmm. I am disappointed that this movie isn't making more. And I wanted to ask you, why do you think this movie is flopping? Do you think it's bad or non-existent marketing? Is it because this isn't a sequel? Because last year, we were told that Pixar is back because Inside Out 2 made all the monies. Mm-hmm. That's what they told us. What happened?
Yeah, I think part of it was time of year. There just wasn't that much out at the beginning of the summer, which we talked a little bit about earlier. Just it feels like this summer got a late start with summer movies. So I think that's part of it. I think this was marketing-wise drawn out, and so there wasn't this really big push for it that's really recent. I also don't know that Disney had, like, what has Disney had out this year that would be a trailer for it, that like where this would show up as a trailer? I think it probably
animation wise just Lilo and Stitch, I think.
Yeah.
Which came out a month before.
Yeah, so I don't that could be part of it too, is that there wasn't enough theater time for marketing. But I don't know. What do you think it was?
I agree with you that it didn't have that much push or have something it could attach itself to hype it up. Mm-hmm. I see what you mean by not that much in the summer, because, I mean, I'm not that excited about Superman. Probably am not going to go see Jurassic World. The only thing I'm really excited about is Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon were kind of ruling the kids market right now.
Yeah.
I don't think there was much place for Elio to be hyped, especially because Stitch is about to make $1 billion. How to Train Your Dragon made a modest amount. I think it's over 300 million at the box office. So, yeah, Elio was always going to be third place. I don't think the time of release did Elio any favors. Mm-hmm. None. No favors. So let's get into it. What's some of the things that we liked about it?
Okay, so looking at my notes, I said the opening Voyager in space is so beautiful. So, so beautiful.
I love Pixar openings like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's starting to be a jam.
Except, where are our fucking shorts, Pixar? How are you supposed to bring up the next generation of directors? Maybe that's your problem. Maybe that's why everything sucks now. That's why people stop coming. It's because there aren't shorts now.
There's a direct correlation between the quality of Pixar movies and their lack of shorts.
Exactly.
We're going to write a book. We're going to write an article. You have people you know at Pixar. We're going to write an article and send it to them. And things are going to change.
That's exactly how it works. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this thing about spoons. I love spoons. I love unique spoons. And like occasionally spoons come home with me from places that they probably shouldn't come home with me from. and so there's a quote, "I'll bring spoons, nice, peaceful spoons." I cracked up. I was the only person in the theater that thought that was funny, but I didn't. I love the 3D glowing stars in his bedroom. I thought that was really cool. I had 3D stars in my bedroom all through college, at least, and maybe after college. I thought the bullying was troubling. It was deeply disturbing.
I liked watching it the second time because the first time, I can't remember the audience the first time, but the second time, I know it was me and there was a family behind me that laughed at pretty much all the funny things. So I was like, okay, this is a very, like, the general audiences are enjoying this movie.
There weren't a ton of people when I saw the movie, but there were, I don't know, maybe 10 other people.
When did you see it?
Last week. It definitely hasn't been more than a week and a half. A couple other notes that I had. Binge drinking. There was the whole scene where Elio and his friend were killing time and doing all the fun things in space. And they're binge drinking. And I'm like, that's weird. That's a weird thing to...
I liken it to because they have all the drinks and then they have all the food. Uh-huh. Because Elio throws up all the drink and then Glordon throws up all, like, the earth food.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't look at it any other way. I was going to say, like, maybe it's kind of like when you have too much candy, but they could have just had
candy.
Yeah. Because they had sweets. Burgers and stuff.
Anyway, thought that was really weird. And then the part that made me, ugly cry was when they were flying through the debris field. It's like, been reunited and got to get out and not be caught by the military. And the aunt and Elio fly into space and get caught in the debris field. And this is her specialty, literally her specialty, which, like, what a badass. What a unique career to give her and have her be the boss at it and to know all the things and then have her not have the resources and they get creative. And so flying through the debris field with her getting to show off like her expertise and hearing all of these different languages and people helping out globally made me cry. Really, like, I'm tearing up right now just talking about it. I thought that was so, so amazing and something that we don't, like, akin to how we feel about the Olympics when you actually get people together from all of these different countries unified in one objective.
That was a moment for me too. And it's different because, like, moments where people are coming together to help strangers is what gets me because the world is so fucked up right now, especially in our country. Like everything's so fucked up right now. And just seeing, like, the blind togetherness of nerds and scientists. Because I watched the clip when Melmac is helping and they go out of range.
Oh my gosh. Did you see who Melmac is? It's Coach Beard from Ted Lasso.
I haven't seen Ted Lasso, so I don't have the connotation.
You definitely need it. It's worth getting the 1 month subscription to Apple TV just to watch Ted Lasso.
Thank you for hitting on why I don't want it. Why,
literally.
Like,
yeah, I mean,
you just have to get it for a month.
Yeah, just get it for a month. And it, like, it's the sort of thing where I have renewed, now Matt has it, but I have renewed my subscription just to watch Ted Lasso and then turn it off again. It is so wholesome and joyous. It's the perfect thing to watch right now.
The thing that I missed watching the movie that I accidentally watched the clip and got it later. Mm-hmm. When he says they're going out of range, he says, just stay on the frequency. Mm-hmm. I think he was relaying the thing to the other ham radio people. Mm-hmm. And they were in range of those other people. So as they were passing through, and I'm just like, wow, people can be really awesome when we get our heads out of our asses. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and there was another movie that I watched recently that, like, it was the same thing that had me tearing up.
Yeah, I think that was my, not one cool shot. I mean, it was a cool shot, but just one great scene. That was my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Let's talk about the story right quick. Let's talk about the big thing. Let's talk about the big controversial thing that I've been reading about. So, we've talked about it. I think we talked about it last episode or a couple episodes ago when the new trailer came out. This movie was massively overhauled. Mm-hmm. Adrian Molina was originally on the project. He left. I've read reports on why he left. Disney wanted him to tone down. I'm paraphrasing. Basically wanted to tone down the queer coding of Elio. Because Elio was originally meant to be analogous to Adrian Molina himself, who is a homosexual, is a gay man. And basically, Pixar, not Disney, Pixar, I read, are going away from personal stories. And they wanted it to be more universal, have more universal appeal. Mm-hmm. And my question is, having kind of seen the original trailer and, you know, the trailer for the revamp, like, how do you feel about the finished product, that being kind of the reason for the big change?
It sucks that that's the reason why it was changed. I still think this movie is incredibly queer-coded. Not in a blatant way, but it's not hiding it. Like, it's very clear that there's some deeper connection between Elio and, is it Glordon?
Glordon. It's Gordon with an L.
Yeah. There's something else happening there. But also, you can also chalk that up to them having best friends for the first time.
Yeah.
So I think it goes both ways. But it, to me, it's very clear that it's queer-coded. And especially when you think about Glordon and his dad, I think their whole relationship is very clear that Glordon is other, his otherness is something that his dad is, he's not as ashamed as, I think that, like, we had this kind of buildup of thinking that he would be ashamed because Glordon isn't like him, but that's actually not what happened, and so that was also heartening to see that he values his otherness and understands and recognizes that in his son. What about you?
I like that aspect of Grygon and his relationship with his son, Glordon. I disagree that it's clear that it's queer-coded. I think it sucks that that's the reason they changed it. I like what we got. Mm-hmm. I like the product of the changes. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of fine with the changing of making it clearly queer-coded. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a fan of allowing subtext to be subtext, mm-hmm. because the subtext and the nuance allows other people to see what they want to see in a product or in a movie, let's say. Because if you say a thing is a thing, it's stuck being that thing. It kind of makes it indisputable that it is a thing. If you say, I'm not going to give a vague example, but it allows, like, I watched a video on someone talking about how instead of being queer coded, I was about to say Luca, Elio is autistic.
Yeah.
And that's a Lilo and Stitch thing that I pulled. I'm like, I can see how they're very similar. And that's what I thought. Like, oh, he kind of seems like he's high functioning autistic and he's very smart.
Yeah, I think that's definitely and to be clear, I don't think that Lilo is autistic.
There are aspects that could come off as that.
I think at least they're coding it more as a symptom of bad behavior because she doesn't have structure and is lashing out. But Elio, I definitely think, and like, I do have a decent amount of experience with autistic children specifically. I babysat two autistic girls when I was in high school and have a cousin who's autistic as well, and very different levels of the spectrum. But that's really the extent of my exposure and experience. But yeah, to me, Elio did read as autistic, and kind of there were a couple of things. He's hyperfixating about space, which is one of the things that clues his aunt in, is that he all of a sudden isn't. His social interactions are awkward, and he's not interested in other people or building bonds, even though the one guy that initially comes to his club is like, actually seems pretty cool and pretty into it. So yeah, there are a couple of things like that.
I like that them turning down the personal of it for one group opened it up for multiple groups to see themselves in Elio. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruffle any feathers. I get that representation is important, but I think nuance is important also. Mm-hmm. And allowing not making subtext text allows for other people to see themselves. You can still see yourself, like, we can still draw queer-coded lines in Elio. Mm-hmm. Between him and Glordon, between him and Bryce, the kid who he meets at his ham radio club, air quotes. Mm-hmm. You can still draw those lines, but they are not hard-drawn lines. Mm-hmm. Which allows for more interpretation. That's why I'm fine with the change. How do you feel about Universal stories versus personal films? Because we've seen, from Pixar especially, we've seen a lot of success and a lot of failure from both. Soul and Bao and Turning Red. Coco and Luca, very successful
personal
stories versus, you know, the Toy Stories. Heck, even Finding Nemo is kind of personal. Mm-hmm. Versus the Wall-Es and the Incredibles and, you know, the Toy Stories that are more universal.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, even thinking about, I don't think you can really separate and say that Pixar movies haven't been personal. Even Toy Stories, like, yes, it's an ensemble cast, but you're experiencing this through Woody and Buzz's experience, primarily. And same with Wall-E. Like, the overarching message of Wall-E is about the human race. That's where the commentary is. But the story is about a robot. The thing that makes it so impactful is that we're having emotions based off of two robots interacting, especially at that time. That's not something we were thinking about. We weren't thinking about mm-hmm. the emotional elements that could be tied to a robot. Meanwhile, now I'm fighting with ChatGPT to give me an answer on something that I've been asking for 5 days. And it's apologetic. And it keeps saying, like, I'm so sorry. I know you shouldn't trust me, but if you give me one more chance, like, I'm okay. That's weird. Also, just give me the thing. But yeah, so getting back to personal versus these broader stories, I think Pixar has always been told through the lens of personal stories, but the range of people that can relate to those stories may be different. And in general, yeah, I think I think the stories that are less grounded in culture tend to be more approachable. I also think there's huge value in exposing children to different cultures. And so I really hope we don't move away from that. We're already becoming more and more isolated. And so I think that's one thing that Pixar has done very well. Disney has done a great job of exposing you to wonder and to developing new worlds and accepting fantasy and all of these places that aren't really grounded in our society. That's Disney's brand, that it's really taught us to trust in the world building that's happening in the movie without having to take it too seriously. There's a suspension of disbelief that we've all accepted. And the power of Pixar is we're taking real life things and changing our perspective on them, or giving more context. And a lot of children won't ever get to leave the country. A lot of children won't get to leave the state. And so giving more exposure to other cultures, I think, is something that I really hope Pixar doesn't move away from and doesn't lose.
Disney is very in the box, you know, magical wonder. And Pixar gives you that abstract shit that makes you think and somehow makes it relatable to real life. Like, I had no idea how the hell Soul was going to impact me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, trying to find purpose and, you know, enjoying your life for what it is something that I am working very hard to do right now, mm-hmm. thanks to Soul. And personal stories with universal appeal can work. Mm-hmm. And I feel like audiences, and we'll get back to the minutiae of Elio in a second, but this is important. I'm kind of getting tired of audiences living in hyperbole with Disney films and Pixar films and, you know, the MCU and just big blockbuster things. Just appreciate the kind of smallness of it. Mm-hmm. Because if everything is big, nothing is big. Mm-hmm. And if everything is the best, nothing is the best. Let different people enjoy different things. Mm-hmm. It just ruins the enjoyability of movies sometimes when we're going, everything has to be, it's the best or nothing. Like, there are good things in this that I wish people would, you know, appreciate. Whether it's, you know, universal, like anyone can appreciate it, or it's stuff that it may have missed you. Mm-hmm. If it missed you, maybe it's not for you. Mm-hmm. But a personal story, just because it's a personal story based on someone's inspired by someone's experiences, doesn't mean it can't be relatable to more than that person or that more than that group. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. So you want to hear my headcanon for the end of this movie that has to do with Lilo and Stitch? Mm-hmm. Elio goes back to Earth, and in my head, he's sitting at his desk doing whatever, doodling like Glordon or something. And his aunt knocks on his door and says he has a visitor. And he turns around and it's Lilo, like older Lilo. And she says, "I heard you like aliens."
Nice.
And like Stitch kind of just peeks out from behind her and just kind of says,
"How?"
in his little his alien voice. Because I think it's either at the end of Lilo and Stitch 2 or at the end of the TV show, Lilo becomes an ambassador.
Oh.
And I feel like depending on when this movie is set, it could be like, oh, when they passed up, when Elio declined, mm-hmm. they went and found Lilo. Because mm-hmm. the Communiverse and the Galactic Alliance could be, you know, like they know of each other.
Yeah.
As soon as the movie was over with, like the entire time I was like, oh, Lilo would be all over this.
Yeah.
Like, this is Lilo and Stitch's wheelhouse. Uh-huh. And it's so interesting that they came out in the same year.
Yeah. So, I mean, aside from, let's talk similarities, you've got both of these children around the same age. Both of them have lost their parents relatively recently. Both of them mm-hmm. have strong, independent women who are taking on this parental role that had no intention of doing so beforehand.
And are struggling to do so.
And are struggling. And they're at different points in their lives a little bit, because obviously Elio's sister is, she has a career. Aunt. Elio's aunt has a career, but she's making sacrifices to take care of Elio. And Lilo's sister is struggling and is young, probably right at 18, 19. Old enough to take custody, but probably not much older than that. Already big similarities. I do think Lilo and Stitch, the live action, was pointing to Elio. Elio's aunt being a Marine. I think she was a Marine.
Air Force.
She was Air Force.
I thought she was Space Force, which made me ask, like, when is this movie set? Because he has a smartphone.
Yeah. So there's some similarities. Both of the kids are bullied and take kind of different approaches, but lashing out is one of the approaches that both of them take.
Yeah.
Elio's obsessed with space and becomes obsessed with Gordon. Lilo's obviously obsessed with Stitch.
I feel like Lilo is, pardon the pun, a lot more grounded than Elio is.
Yeah. And I think Elio is trying to escape his reality, right? Like, everything that he's researching, everything that he's listening for is to escape his current situation. And Lilo is living in her current situation, but it sucks. And so she's saying, this sucks. Like, I'm over this. No. And is just going to act how she's going to act with really no repercussions, which is why it was so frustrating to watch, is because, like, I don't have patience for this. Clearly, like, intervention is needed. And so it's hard to have the social worker involved, but also, like, that's absolutely what was needed in that case.
Another thing that Lilo and Elio have in common, besides how similar their names sound, their loner-ness, you know, lack of friends. One of my favorite things about, especially the recordings, like the Carl Sagan recordings, is that they take the concept of, are we alone in the universe, and play and apply it so well to Elio, because Elio, with his lack of friends and his lack of people that understand him, including his aunt, he's asking the question, am I alone, literally, in the universe? Another one of the moments where I almost teared up was when he's sitting on the roof with the in the green circle, and he's just looking up, and he, like, this single tear rolls out, and it's just like, damn, this kid is so lonely. And as a, what is he, 11?
I think he might even be younger, but I don't know.
That is probably one of the worst times to be by yourself.
Yeah.
It sucks so much. Mm-hmm. And you got to feel for the kid, because he's smart. He's awkward, but who isn't at that age? Mm-hmm. He has hobbies. And I was thinking, like, when did he decide to give Earth a shot? I think during the debris field, when, like, he reaches out to Bryce and Bryce actually apologizes for what happened and takes interest and tries to, and helps him, and he realized, and he asked the question earlier, like, is it me, is he alone because it's him, does nobody want him because of him? And I guess that shows him, like, no, you're fine, you just gotta find your tribe. He finds aliens who accept him. Like, he finds other life in the universe, and he's not alone in the universe because they accept him. And how that those metaphors mesh were so great to me. And I really liked how that played out. And I wrote down, the only thing I bumped up against was the ending. And I just talked myself into, like, oh, when did Elio decide to go back to Earth?
Yeah.
And I'm kind of okay with it just cuts to black, with he and his aunt just staring up at the sky. It's like, no, you don't need anything after that, because he has his aunt now. He has people that see him, basically, and kind of understand him. Draw your own conclusions. You don't need a montage of, oh, everything's great in life now. Like, no, draw your own conclusions. Yeah. He's got people. He's going to be okay.
Him deciding to go to Earth, I mean, when he turned around and saw his aunt, Like, he'd been accepted into this alien world as an ambassador, and he's going to get to stay there, but she couldn't. And at that point, he has already realized that she cares for him deeply, and the challenges that she's been facing and expressing aren't because it's him. It's because overall the situation sucks. So I think knowing that they're in it together and that, like, she really, really loves him and wants him to be around, I think that's part of the battle, right? Because he was feeling not wanted, which makes it so much harder.
Going back to how they revamped the story, looking at the original trailers, they were going to lean into him lying and saying that, like, a lot of the crux was going to be him lying and not being an ambassador. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that them not knowing he was a child was such a small thing. Because when it's the third act turn that sends him back to Earth, which gets to one of Michael's shots when they push him out and he lands on the beach and he's staring up at the sky and he says, "Don't leave me." That shot, I was like, oh, that's probably another moment where I was like,
yeah,
it's dusty in here. But that shot was great.
Talking about cool shots, I think my favorite scene was the debris field, but I think my favorite shot is when Elio and his aunt are rushing into the pod and shutting out the military officials and about to take Lorden back up into space.
My favorite is when they're yelling for help and the screen goes black. That sunrise. Like the sun coming over, I guess it's Earth. Because it looks like, I want to say 2001, but I feel like it's a different movie. But
no, that I think it's right. Yeah.
That shot was my favorite shot. That was my one cool shot of the movie. Another thing I read is that Pixar's mouths, like the bean-shaped mouth, is being used a lot. I looked, and Mei Li from Turning Red, Luca, Elio, all have the same, like, they're all mouth similar
shape, yeah,
mouths. But I also looked at Riley from Inside Out, Miguel, Ian Lightfoot from Onward. They're all, like, they have, like, the same skeleton also. Like, if you break them down to just wires, they're all similar. I mean, and it's the same thing with 3D princesses from Disney. Like, they all have the big eyes and the slender face. So, I mean, it's fine. It's a animation style from an animation studio. Look at Laika characters. Laika characters all look similar, too. So that's not the biggest thing. I didn't bump up against that. What do you think about the score?
I think I liked it, but now I don't remember anything about it, so not particularly memorable.
In my notes, I wrote that when paired with the movie, it wasn't really anything super spectacular. But when listened to in isolation, like I did this morning, I noticed and appreciated a lot of the sci-fi flourishes that are tucked away in the score. Like, there are a lot of arpeggio, like, a lot of electronic arpeggiated figures that are, like, all over. Like, the moments where it's, like, something low and then it's, like, ramping up in excitement, you get those electronic arpeggios. I think those are cool. Is this top-tier Pixar?
No, I think it's middle of the road. Didn't like it as much as Monsters, Inc. and Nemo and WALL-E, but I liked it more than the first two and fourth Toy Story and Onward, and I think more than Soul, but I need to watch Soul again.
You should watch Soul again, just saying. I wish with movies, especially from franchises, I wish it were possible to watch these movies in a vacuum. So you can just appreciate the movie for itself and not, oh, this is a movie from a big studio. Or comparing it to other things that came before. Because like I said earlier,
can you imagine that, like, there are people that experience movies that way? Like, don't pay attention to the studio at all.
Yeah. It's wild. I wish there was a way to, like, clear a movie, like your favorite movie. Wipe your history with it and just watch it for the first time every time to see what, like, is does it still hold up? Or so, like, so watching it in a vacuum.
Funny story. Amber and my dad, Bernie, and I sat down and watched Inception last week. And Amber and I love Inception. Bernie had never seen it. And so Amber and I are across the room, like, texting each other, of course, like, theorizing. Because the question at the end of Inception, spoiler alert, is he in a dream or is he not? Does the top topple? And
does it wobble a little bit?
Yeah, because there's a little bit of a wobble, but also his kids are dressed exactly the same way as in his dream state and his memory. Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting talking to Bernie afterwards to get his interpretation and then kind of sharing what Amber and I've been talking about. But yeah, there are some movies, that's one of them, that I would love to see for the first time.
A lot of these movies that we've talked about throughout the life of the podcast, I would love to, like, without context to other movies, of other, you know, Disney or Pixar movies, I would love to be able to watch those again for the first time. Mm-hmm. For me, is this top tier Pixar? No. Is this still a really good animated film? Yes. Because I think if DreamWorks put out The Wild Robot last year, and it was a revelation, and I'm like, wow, this is what DreamWorks is capable of. Mm-hmm. If DreamWorks had put out Elio, I feel like people would be a lot more forgiving.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I get it that we come to expect a lot from Pixar, but my point is it's still a good movie. Mm-hmm. You can have a really good bologna sandwich, or you can have like a top tier steak.
Yeah.
They're both good meals.
Yeah.
It's just, what are you expecting from one versus the other?
Yeah. And I think compared to DreamWorks, compared to Disney, it was revolutionary. Everything that came from Pixar was revolutionary because there was new technology with every single movie. The storytelling was great. They built this pipeline for developing new directors and people that didn't typically get experience directing. They had this great pipeline. And so it was innovative on so many different fronts. And now they've got this formula and they've kind of optimized and, of course, like, been kind of combined with Disney a bit more than they used to be. And so it's settling in and it's not on the cutting edge anymore of everything. It's not as competitive with its talent. And so I think it's settling into, like, an established animation studio now, but it's not the standout that we associated with Pixar in its first 15, 20 years. And that's a transition that, like, you and I know are having a hard time with, because in our minds it's still what it was 15 years ago. It's still good. It's still a good studio, what's coming out of it. Like, I like the movies that's coming out of it, but compared to some of the revolutionary changes to animation, to storytelling, and it's still maintained that Pixar movies are made for children with adults in mind. What I like about Pixar is that the comedy is a little bit higher brow, and we're talking about really complicated concepts that watching Pixar movies through different age groups, each audience is getting something a little bit different based on how much they're comprehending. But I also think that other animation studios have caught up to that trend. Yeah.
You want to get to some trivia?
Yeah. Okay, so sci-fi references. There were references to Terminator 2, Alien, Star Trek, Alf, and 2001 A Space Odyssey. I recognized 2001 and Star Trek and Alien. I haven't seen Terminator 2 or Alf, so I don't know.
You haven't seen Terminator 2? Like, at all?
I don't think I've seen any of the Terminator movies.
Watch the first two and you're fine. Mm-hmm. When clone Elio dissolves, like, he puts the thumbs up, that's a Terminator 2 reference.
Mm, okay.
And then Alf, I believe Melmac is the name of the planet that Alf is from.
Got it. Other trivia, one of the people helping Elio through the debris field is Julia from Luca. Mm-hmm. Zoe Saldana is the 24th Oscar winner. to provide a voice in a Pixar film, including Tom Hanks, Holly Hunter, Ben Burtt, and Jamie Foxx. That's pretty awesome. Elio's first and last name both mean sun. Elio being Helios in Greek and Solis or Sol in Latin.
Also, we did talk about Glordon. I'm so surprised that Disney didn't market the shit out of, or merchandise the shit out of Glordon.
Right? Yeah.
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 He still has the best line. I'm not fireproof. Really? Why did you say so?
I did like him as a character. I thought he was good. I thought he was playful, not too serious, added the comic relief.
Help me, Father. He's too strong and too shredded. And the concept of language discs that they had, and the fact that he, like, what almost killed him was getting too cold. Like, they set that up very well at the beginning. Because he's never been outside of the ship. Earth is colder. And him accidentally, like, breaking his was, yo, that was another borderline tear-jerking moment.
Yeah.
And he reminded me of the monster from Monsters, Inc. that has to put his eyes in. Oh, and another trivia. Because Glordon doesn't have eyes, when he's crying, he's just drooling more. I thought that was so hilarious. And gross. I want another Monsters project with, like, a cameo from Glordon. Grace, what would you grade the movie?
I think I'm sticking with my B+ on this. I liked it. I'd watch it again. I wouldn't be sad to watch it again.
I'm going to go with a B+ also. I think if, you know, some things were more, like, impactful for me, like the score, and the if the emotional beats, like, gut punched me a little bit more, I would have it up in the A tier. But B+, I'll give it that. I'll give it an A-. Let me take that back. I'll give it an A-. I would rather watch this than Onward again. Definitely Cars 2. Gross.
Or Cars 1, for that matter.
I stand by Cars. I'll defend Cars and Cars 3. I'll watch this before I watch Luca again. This is another original film from Pixar that didn't make money versus, again, Inside Out 2 came out last year and made $1.5 billion. So are we team originals or are we team sequels? Because you just raved about Toy Story 3, which is a 3.
Generally, I like originals more, and not, I think there are so many movies that get sequels that don't deserve or don't need a sequel. There's not, you don't need more story.
I don't need Coco 2. I swear to God, if they make a Ratatouille 2.
Yeah, I don't need that. But like Monsters University, a prequel movie, that was brilliant. Toy Story 3 was so, so good. So I think there are some cases where sequels have been done well. I think this kind of goes back to breaking our idea of what we think Pixar is as a studio is. In my mind, Pixar is known for really original stories that are different from everything else. And it's difficult to sustain that. And so I hope they can come up with a couple of originals that really hit. And maybe it's timing, maybe it's marketing, maybe it's whatever. I think this was a good movie. I think it deserves to get more credit. Obviously, like, the ratings-wise, it's doing pretty well.
Yeah, people like it. It's just Disney wasn't able to capitalize on the good press, the good buzz. Speaking of what's next from Pixar, we have Hoppers, which the after-credits scene was a nod to Hoppers, which comes out in March of next year. And we got Toy Story 5 coming out June of next year.
Do we know the premise of it yet? Is there a trailer? I don't think I've seen anything.
There's not a trailer. I don't know if there's a reliable synopsis that I've found. There's a lot of concept art, though.
Got it.
My one cool shot was the sunrise during the debris field scene. And honorable mention was Elio on the beach after he gets expelled from the Communiverse. Ooh, speaking of, shout out to Brad Garrett for his performance as Grygon. He's been in so many Pixar movies, and he's been a voice of so many characters. It was nice to see hear Brad Garrett as a character again. He was the pufferfish in Finding Nemo and Finding Dory. He was Dim in A Bug's Life. He's had a lot of good roles. Grace, what do you have for Drunk Disney?
So for Drunk Disney, I think drink anytime someone uses the radio, anytime Glordon makes a joke, or even if he's not intending to make a joke, something that makes us laugh.
Does something funny.
Yeah, does something funny. And then anytime Elio lies.
He's always, like, not lying to, like, deceive, but he's lying to cover up kind of how lame he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stretch the truth. Yeah.
But I love the, okay, bye, I love you. Mm-hmm. They say that as a joke in the original trailer, mm-hmm. and I'm glad that that didn't become the joke that it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. At the end, like, that's, sincere. They think that's an Earth saying.
Yeah.
And when they say goodbye, I love that they take the disc off and they still say it in their own alien language.
Mm-hmm. And what a great thing to keep from, if that's what you take away from experiencing humans from Earth, is love. Like, well, that's pretty great.
Good film. That's our review of Elio. What did you think? Let us know in the comments on our socials. Tell us what you think of Elio. Where would you rank this as a Pixar film? Are you excited for more Pixar coming up? We got another original, and then we have a sequel, and then we have more sequels. So let us know what you think. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/DisneyVerses and on Twitter at DisneyVS. No, I don't call it X. I don't. I refuse. Remember to rate and view and subscribe to us on iTunes and on Spotify. Please give us a 5-star review and let us know what you think of the show. This was a mini-sode, so our next episode is episode 100. We are going to talk about the show, talk about the podcast, recap a little bit, and we're going to play a fun game. We are going to construct a Disney high school. We are going to take some subjects from high schools, and we are going to put Disney characters in those roles. We're going to have a principal. We're going to have assistant principals. We're going to have, all the subjects and a gym teacher and a lunch lady probably. And we may have a special guest or two to come and help us.
Yeah. I might lobby for some Hogwarts classes too, just to round it out. Even though it's a different franchise. But obviously chemistry and potions, okay. But maybe you need extraterrestrial studies instead of muggle studies.
I think we should have extraterrestrial studies. Especially because Elio was such a sci-fi heavy movie. Like, there were a lot of references. We said a lot of references to sci-fi movies. And it feels like an old school, like, Steven Spielberg level sci-fi movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we'll have that for you soon. I hope everyone's had a safe summer, happy summer. School's almost back in session, so that'll be a good way for us to end the summer. Thank you for listening, as always, and we'll see y'all next episode.
Goodbye.